connect, solve painful problems, raise amazing adults, and have healthy families. Welcome to the Sean Donahue Show. Jordan and I do this podcast because we want your family to be close and connected. And we want you to feel empowered and equipped in your most important job, the most important job in the world. Let's go deeper than this podcast. Head to my website, parentingmodernteens.com, and get my email straight to your inbox. And when you're ready to go deep and get serious coaching from me, join me in my VIP membership. Parents are teachers, and every home is a school. So teach well, love well. All right, let's have some fun together.
One of the reasons why I enjoy this podcast so much is because, you know, I get to be here with you and with one of my favorite people, Jordan, just talk about things that people don't normally talk about. And today is definitely one of them. You know, parenting is so emotional and so complex and so painful at times, so amazing and so positive at times. But I just come here today to talk about an important topic that people just do not talk about. And it's a pretty heavy title, Jordan. I mean, when your kids break your heart. It's
intense. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, let's be real. We can't think about raising a child and it's all going to be butterflies and cottontail rabbits running around like with unicorns. And it's just amazing all the time. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, there's going to be times when we get mad. There's going to be times when we get sad.
Yeah.
But we really don't, you know, think about, man, what happens if we totally, if they just destroy our ideas of what it means to be a parent, right? That child that did something that maybe is unforgivable, some people may be listening and shoot, maybe their kids are in juvenile hall. I don't know.
Right.
What I'm saying is like, we don't prep for that. How do you prep for that?
Yeah. Well, this is why we decided to do this podcast. So I come to you in kind of a more mellow, somber state today. And Jordan is in his normal, you know, typical positive, jolly state. So it's kind of good. We're going to kind of yin and yang today's episode because I just think that everyone can relate to the things you're about to hear. That's a bold statement to say. And I'm going to double down on it. I think that, and I was checking with Jordan to make sure we're on the same page, and it sounds like we are. I think this is important to say this, that there's a really, really good chance that your kids are going to break your heart. It might happen when they're kids. It might be during the teen years. It might be when they're young adulthood. But I think it's a strong thing to say. So I'm trying to give you some knowledge and give you support because your kids are probably going to break your heart at some time.
That's sad. That's so sad.
I know.
But before we say that, I don't want this to discourage anybody from the idea of parenthood because it is very hard. It can be very sad.
Yeah.
But it can also be filled with love and joy. And so much of it. And it's hard to focus on just what we're going to focus on today. But there is a real big reality out there that your kid is not going to pick you when you ask them who your favorite parent is. And it's going to break your heart.
Oh my gosh. And there's your teenager, your young adult could be doing a lot of things we're going to talk about here in a second.
Or you say, what concert do you guys want to go see? And they say Taylor Swift. And you're like, what? And it breaks your heart.
We're going to go
seriously?
Much deeper than that, my man, on today's episode. And so I think there's really two listeners here today. There's a type of parent that you're in that spot right now.
Yeah.
Your heart is broken because of some choices that your child or your teenager, or your young adults made or making. And I want you to know that you're not alone. And this episode's for you. I want you to know that I've been there myself too. And I've been there. It's extremely painful. And then there's a second type of listener that hasn't been there, Jordan. Maybe their kids are younger or their kids are just, you know, their kids are maybe teenagers and they're just really thriving. And so whatever brings you here together today, we made this, you know, this episode to serve you and to support you, inspire you, to show love for you and to do what this podcast is all about, which is just encouraging great families and great parenting. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be intense, man.
And it can help anybody who maybe is going through a relationship where they've got problems or someone broke your heart. I mean, this is going to really be helpful to you. You know, and as I say that, I'm thinking there's got to be a different feel for that.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Like the feeling you get when, let's say, a loved one breaks your heart versus the feeling you get when your child breaks your heart.
Right. It is so different.
It's a different feeling.
Feelings are hard to describe. I'll do my best to try to describe it on today's episode because, you know, just full disclosure, I'm not going to share any personal information about my children on today's episode. That's their private life. And I need to honor their boundaries on this. Like if my kids are 5, 6, and 7, then, you know, it's like, yeah, I can, you know, talk. That's why you might hear me talk more about my 7-year-old than my other two that are teenagers, you know, almost in her 20s. But yeah, so let's just be really specific here, and I'll do some storytelling. When you think of, let's kind of go back and forth on this. When you think of something that a kid or a teenager or a young adult might do to break a parent's heart, besides listen to Taylor Swift, what would be?
Much love to T-Swift, by the way. I was just teasing. I know.
What would be something that would, what's the first thing that would come to mind for you?
Let's say, you know, let's start off with the easy stuff, you know, when they're kids, they're lying to you, and you know they're lying, you know, and it could be even like a little fib.
Right.
It might not even be a deep lie, just a little fib. You're like, I know you're lying to me. It tugs at your heartstrings. Mm-hmm. And then they get older, and then it's like maybe sneaking out, disobeying, which ultimately goes to more lying, doing drugs, right? Maybe it's like you found out that, you know, they, you know, after parenting them for years and years and you've instilled into them being smart decisions, and then they, you know, sipped alcohol, got hammered, you know, ends up in the hospital because something crazy happens and it just breaks your heart. You're just glad that they're okay, but like it breaks your heart. You're like, I told you.
You're just like, I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't know if I like what you're saying or not. You're just like casually listing off like so many things. Like I just, it's so casual the way you're talking about some of these things.
One of my friends, one of my friends who had to tell his parents that he was gay. And that was the biggest fear for him and his parents because they both felt like they could break each other's hearts.
Oh my goodness. So intense. The stuff we're talking about. Here's some more things, you know, and like my, I know that for some parents, these are some stories that I've helped walk parents through is like their kid is being bullied at school, which is very heartbreaking. But what's most heartbreaking for these parents is that the child was not having the inner strength to stand up for themselves. And they would just come home. So heartbreaking for the parents. Oh,
that's so heartbreaking.
For some parents, essentially, imagine you're a parent and you're successful in your career. Maybe you're an academic. Maybe you went even to more college after undergraduate, right? Postgraduate. Yep. And your own child now is getting D's and F's. That's
bad grades.
Heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking.
How about this? How about this is so typical, so common nowadays. It's a term that I call anxious defiance, where your child is so anxious, they just refuse to like leave the house to get out there with in-person friends, to do sports, to do drama, to do music. They're just like a shell of themselves stuck in their house. And you're a parent and you've got your social, your friends, you've got this. That can be heartbreaking.
Yeah. And the things you're listening are more of like secondary than what I was listening.
What
right?
do you mean?
To me, I'm listing something that they are doing to me.
Oh, interesting.
You know, yes, they got drunk or did drugs, but that's ultimately a reflection of me.
Oh.
And you're listening like, oh, he's at school or she's at school and she's getting bullied.
Right.
That does break my heart, but it's not for me. My heart's breaking for them.
This is you're talking about deep psychological stuff that we're gonna address in about, you know, in this episode. Like this is, it's so complex, it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
But this is why our children breaking our heart is different than someone else breaking our heart, because it's like that fine line. Right. It's that fine line. Like it's so hard to not internalize it. It's so hard to not take that on. It's so hard it's so hard to say, you know what, that's their own person. They're on their own journey. Right? Like this is like, what have I done? Have I screwed this kid up? Have I not taught them enough? Did I fail them? Did I not discipline them enough? Was I too disciplinary? Did I not shield them enough? Have I screwed up? What have I done? You know what I mean?
Right. which ultimately could make then the parents get mad about each other, because let's just say the stereotypical movie where the dad is hard and stern and pushes the kid out, and the mom's like, stop it, I want my son here with me, and you're pushing him out, right? I'm thinking of, what's the movie, The Proposal, with Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock, and him and his dad cannot get along at all, and the mom is so frustrated because of this same reason. You know, parenting different ideas on how to how we think our kids need to be, and ultimately give them the best future.
Here's a story. We're not close with this family anymore, but we were close with this lovely couple about 10 years ago, and they were a happily married couple, very healthy. Yeah. They had a she brought one child into the relationship, and then they had a child together. And she brought a child into the relationship because she had a teen pregnancy.
Okay.
And so they ended up, you know, having a great family, and the child called her stepdad dad, right? So she has two dad. Her bio dad was not really a good dad or involved in her life.
Okay.
And this mother is now, you know, in her 30s and 40s. And so she's become an advocate for talking to teenage girls about the dangers of teenage sex and unprotected sex and premarital sex. So she's has a platform and she's just a great mom. It's a lovely family. And then something happened which broke her heart.
What happened?
Well, I can guess.
Her youngest daughter, who she had when she was a teenager, ended up getting pregnant.
As a
teenager. Oh my gosh. That is like full circle. Right.
So this is the type of reason that story right there is why we're having this podcast, because there's been so many parents that have been in, you know, programs trying to get sober off alcohol and drugs, and they are doing the best they can. They've been sober for years to teach their kids to stay away from drugs and alcohol. And then how heartbreaking would that be to see your own child go down that same path, right?
Yeah, it makes me think about, like, how was that child getting parented? Was it abstinence, abstinence, abstinence? Mm-hmm. Or was it, hey, be smart, make sure you use protection?
Right.
With the alcohol conversations, you do not drink a sip. You don't drink, or is it?
It makes you wonder, like, right? Or is it just
you can have some wine at 8, 9 years old with the family. It's fine. It's not supposed to be, you know, it's like, I want to know what I need to be doing.
Right. This
you know?
Is why this is such a complex topic, because like if there's anyone who maybe did an amazing job teaching her daughter about the dangers of, you know, teenage sex, unprotected sex, it would be her.
Yeah.
And she, you know. How about this?
Right.
You know, I had a client once, and they hired me, and I worked with her son, who was not only getting involved with drinking and alcohol, but then he tells me, yeah, I'm taking LSD.
Oh.
And I said, LSD? Like, I'm thinking to myself,
I don't even know what that
who
would,
does that?
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Are you in Nirvana? Like, is this who takes, I haven't said that to him. Like, who's taking, he's like, oh no, it's really come back in my school. It's very popular in my school. And the mother is just. I mean, he was high on LSD at his 11-year-old sister's birthday party.
Oh, that's so hard. That's heartbreaking.
Right?
Sure. Heartbreaking.
Yeah. I had a call just yesterday, and it was a consultation call because this family is totally hurting. And essentially, it was a situation. Yeah. We've got our son is a very successful drug dealer. And he's only with us 2 days a week, and he's with his other parent. He's a total enabler, and refusing school and dealing drugs, and we don't know what to do.
How do you? How man?
That's not for, don't ask me.
How do?
Don't ask me.
How do
not,
you do it, Sean Gagne? I honestly would say you go lock the doors, drop them off, and leave them, and never have them come back.
Well, there's
out.
A but lot I'm obviously you can do.
Not gonna, there's a lot there. How do you?
That's
do
not what we're
that?
Doing. That's not what we're talking about
that?
Today. Is
how, I know, but I'm just like this situation. I wouldn't even know what to do. I'd be like, well, dang, shot. I don't know. Good luck.
Well, it's a super personal question. You don't need to answer right now. I'm putting you on the spot. But if I were to ask you, or I would ask your wife, Dani, you know, what would be, you know, maybe something that would happen with your children that would be just so heartbreaking for you. You just be honest. They're young. They're never going to listen to this. What would you want to pass? What would it be if your child did this or went down this path? You just have to be honest with yourself? Like, this would break your heart. Would you want to answer that? You don't need to. I'm not going
to
answer.
I mean, I'm trying to think.
If you were to ask me, I'm not going to answer that because
I try to be as open with my kids as possible. Okay. So, like, I think it would be if they were doing something and lying to us about it so in tune mm-hmm. that like we truly believe that they were telling the truth. And then we come to find out that it was all a lie. I think that would
lying,
be heartbreaking.
The lying. Oh, so heartbreaking.
The deep lying, the deep multi-layered long lying probably.
Oh, the long lying.
But like one act, you know, mm-hmm. we all mess up. Let's be real. Like let's now reflect on our own lives. When have we made our parents feel this way? You know, and there's probably several times where we've broken our parents' hearts. And we could say maybe now that we've learned from that.
Oh,
so like
gosh.
Ultimately with these kids, we hope that they're going to learn from it. They can make a mistake. Hopefully it's not a one-time drinking, getting in a car, driving, and someone dies mistake. Because that's a lifelong lesson that is terrible and that's heartbreaking in its own
way. Oh my gosh, drinking and driving.
Right?
Oh, what about this? What about, I mean, the list is, this is... It's like, I don't know when to stop.
But it's something where, to me, it's the relationship with our kids that is so heartbreaking when you have so much love for them and they do something. Like, that's why lying is so much for me. And it's not just the surface lie. It's like, if they're doing something, because I can be cool with anything. Dude, you're going to go, you know, and I feel like I'm going to be a cool dad and I just want them to be safe and to think about their future because it's so important. One decision can ruin your life. And if they ultimately are lying about all that, I don't know. If I found out my kid was some kind of drug dealer, you know, I'd be like, that'd break my heart.
What about if you're a man and you just really believe in like, you know, boundaries and treating women well, and then you found out that your son or your daughter was involved with sexting or asking people for pictures, right? Or
apparently that's happening
a lot.
Right,
I'm saying.
Now.
This is why we need to have this episode. It is happening. It's happening less now than it was, I think, a couple years ago, thank God, because there's more education on it. But this is what I'm saying. Like, are we ready to change the subject yet? Because, like, this is not...
Right.
Right? Like, this we can not, go on and on, easy. Like, about, yeah, like, stuff that could break our hearts. I'm like, I'm honestly, like, I don't even know. Like, okay. Like today we're going to talk about what we should do.
Okay, I have a deep
question. Yeah, let's change this.
Before we move on, I got a deep question. Yeah. Okay, all right. So, with feelings like this, do any of your clients, and you probably never asked them this, but maybe you can speak on their behalf. Do any of your clients ever think, man, I totally should have never had a kid. This is, I feel so bad now. Yeah. I wish I would have never done this. Really?
I think it's fair to say that
like your heart is broken that much. You're like, this was a journey I should have not went down.
It kind of makes sense that the majority of people that are in a weight loss program are there because of the emotional pain or the physical pain that their obesity has caused them, right? It's the pain is feeling the positive behavior and the transformative behavior, the pain, right? Like I'm on 6 months of like a workout program. And the reason why I signed up for that program is because I was in physical pain, right? Physical therapy I had plantar fasciitis in my foot. I had back issues from a basketball accident. And so the majority of my clients are people that are sick of being in pain. And they call me and they said, I need to be in your membership. I need to see you one-on-one.
Yeah.
I can't live in this anymore. And so either because they're heartbroken, right? Mm-hmm. But I do a smaller percentage of my clients are like, no, we're in a good spot. Like, we're just really thriving. I just want to make sure we stay here and I want to level up my parenting.
Oh, that's great.
But
that's
it does not make sense. That's the smaller majority for people that I work with, right? And probably in therapy and counseling, right?
So you then ultimately, let's bring back the example you brought of your recent client that came to you and said their kid is a drug dealer. You not only have to counsel that kid, but you have to cancel the parents because of the way they feel too.
A kid like that, who's most kids that are in these divinal spots, traditional therapy is not going to work for them. You have to start with the parents. Doesn't that kind of make sense?
Okay.
Because you can't tell a drug dealer or a kid is refusing to go to school. And now you have to go into a therapist and you have to open up. Like that just does not normally work. Does that kind of make sense? It doesn't.
It makes sense. So those of us that are listening and we feel what we're describing right now, maybe we've listed an example that they're going through. Where do we start?
Right. Well, that's, you know, that's all right. It's like, I was, it's me. I'm trying to smile right now. I was like, can we change the subject? It's like, I can't sit in this anymore. It's too painful. So I have some action steps for us. Okay. And here's the first thing that for someone who's been there, who's had my heart crushed into a million pieces, I have some good advice for you. Are you ready? So Jordan, have you ever heard, we've done an episode on this, but I don't know how deep we get into it. Have you ever heard of the five stages of grief before?
Yes, but I don't know what they are.
So I did a little research again on it, and there's something that are so helpful. We should all try to kind of get a general gist of the five stages of grief so that when you're in that spot, you can maybe counsel yourself, you can talk to yourself. And I think it's almost like if you're in a dark, dark, scary place, or even if you're driving in a dark tunnel in your car, you know it's not fun to drive in this tunnel, but you know the tunnel is going to end eventually. You have some skills. That's eventually. Just a little metaphor. Right. So there's a little bit, some people are now pushing not the five stages of grief, but I have the seven stages of grief. So what I've learned is that many of my clients and have experienced the stages of grief in their own parenting. And I feel like I have personally experienced the stages of grief. So if it's okay with you, I'm going to just go through all seven of them. We'll just chat about them real quick. And we'll just try to memorize what these seven stages are so we can have this self-knowledge, but also we can maybe see these in our own children and in ourselves.
And is the idea for us to understand which stage we're in?
Yeah. So what all the experts will say is that for some people, they go through these stages chronologically. And for many times in our lives, it will not be this. It's like a big mishmash, scribble scrabble.
Oh, okay. And is there anything we can do during these stages to like graduate to get to the next step faster? Or is it just like, no, you're in it. You are in it and you can't move on until X, Y, or Z.
I don't say this very much on this podcast, but I'm going to say, I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to bring in a grief expert on that. That's a great question.
Okay.
I think.
Well, let's go through what they are, because I'm curious.
So again, as you listen to this, think about yourself. Think about the times you've been in grief. Maybe think about the times you were in grief and you were grieving and you didn't even realize it actually. So when you think about grief, what you most times people think about, when you hear the word grief, what's the first thing that you think of? I think I would know what you're about to say.
Sad. Crying. Like,
why? Why would you be in grief? Because what happened?
Someone
died, right? So you're grieving. Died. But
yes,
I think it's really helpful to think about. You can be in grief without someone dying. You know, like one of your children didn't die. One of your children did some of these things that we were just chatting about. It can cause you immense grief. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I would just be mindful of, you know, not saying that out loud.
Oh, I like.
Can you
I
imagine?
Don't know what you mean by that, but I think I like it. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, like, let's say, you know, your kid did something and someone says, hey, what's wrong? And you say, well, I'm grieving.
So true.
Because just a lot of people, you're right. They put that word to someone who has passed. And if your child has not passed and you're grieving over something that others might think is minimal, they might look at you as like, what is wrong with this person? But you are 100% right, Sean. We do grieve in our own way with every, you know, different
really,
things.
Really, really. We're going to go back to that as well, what you just said, because it was so, so wise what you said. The first stage of what it says here on this page that I have, seven stages of grief that I found from Health Agenda HCF Online, is called shock. Right. So shock, you know, you're shocked.
Yeah, okay.
You're in total shock as this just happened.
Like, what?
Feelings of shock are unavoidable in every situation. Even if you feel like they had time to prepare for this or the loss of a loved one or this shock, your child is being bullied or your child is the bully.
Right.
Or your child is about to get D's and F's or your child is doing this. Shock.
I think also, could we replace that word with disbelief?
Yes. That's
as in like, or is that one of the lists? Like, no, my kid, no.
That would be stage two. That's called denial.
Oh,
it is.
Okay. So shock and then denial. Okay. Because that's where my mind would go.
I think in the five stages of grief, I believe that would be the first stage is denial. So they expanded. They added two. I should compare the five stages. So the author writes regarding shock, often there is a sense of numbness. and a self-protective detachment from your feelings because they are too intense to deal with.
Yes. Right? Okay. And so some people's shock would be initial. I'm assuming denial might linger a little bit. Some people might be in denial for a little bit.
Right. So yes, I'm going to ask you in the end of these seven, if you've ever been in the stages of grief, and you can tell us if you like or not. I have been in them. One time that I was in them, I'm not going to get into the details of this. I will in another podcast. I really should. I was on a beach trip with a church youth group, and I was one of the adult leaders. And I'll tell you the details of the story later. There was a bunch of kids playing in the sand and digging holes in the sand. 17-year-old juniors. Have I ever told the story on this podcast?
You have not.
I really should. And essentially,
it's a great story.
Horrible, horrible accident. And two of the teenagers, the sand collapsed and they were buried completely into the sand, buried alive in beach sand in Santa Cruz, California. And they called me and I was playing volleyball. And I immediately ran over there and I said, "Where are they?" He said, "I don't know." They were digging holes in the sand. And I got on my hands and knees and I dug out the top of this kid's, and I saw the top of his black hair. And I dug his head out. And thankfully, he was alive.
He was.
And he said some horrible, horrible things to me. Some of the worst words I've ever heard in my mouth or my ears ever. As I dug his, here he is, 17-year-old young man, you know, wonderful young man, about to go into his senior year of high school, you know, with hair just like Jordan, this black, you know, wavy hair. He said, his name's Kevin. He said, "Leave me, get Ryan." And I said, "Ryan, where's Ryan? How many of you guys are in here?" And so there was, at that time, I just thought it was one kid in the sand. And then I learned that there was a second young man, Ryan Buchanan, buried in the sand next to him. And Ryan was buried much deeper. And he was laying on his belly when the sand collapsed. And if you ever have an idea how heavy sand is, you can go down to Home Depot and you can buy a 50-pound bag of sand for about, you know, $4. 50 pounds, and it's not that big. And so I'll tell you the details of that story another time and what happened to Ryan and the details of that on another podcast. But yes, I went through the stages of grief. Is that okay if I end the story there? And I was in so much shock and denial, and I was having PTSD, like, this did not happen. This was a nightmare. This couldn't have happened. This doesn't happen. Is that okay if I end the story there, or do you need more details?
As long as you will tell the details at a later time where people are curious about what's happening. But just to kind of,
I promise you, I will tell that story. Let's say in the next two episodes, I'll tell that story. So that if you really want to hear this story.
And just so you know, this is a somewhat common occurrence, unfortunately. And in fact, on our Weather Channel, we have a whole segment dedicated
to collapses.
This, just so you know. Sand collapses, and now the awareness of sand collapses and signage on beaches because of sand. Because you're not the only ones to dig a tunnel. I mean, I did it as a kid, and you try to get underneath, but they happen, and it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Let's tell that story. I want to hear how it ends.
That's really good to hear.
But I could imagine that would be you full of grief in that moment.
Post-traumatic stress disorder for so many of us on that beach that day. And I was in denial. This did not happen. This author writes, "For me, denial was not that I didn't believe it. It was more of a sense of, but how can that not happen? Or how can they not be here?" It's like, as in someone died. How can they not be here?
Correct.
How can they have been here?
Correct.
And now they aren't.
Right.
Denial.
We don't understand that the death is such a tricky one too, because sometimes it's in an instant. Just yesterday I talked to XYZ, today I can't, right? It's just so weird for us to comprehend that and get over that.
It would sound You know, because I don't know if you've been there. I don't know if your kids have ever broken your heart, but how do you think it would sound? I think what it sounds is like, there's no way my kid would do that. There's just no way. I can't even imagine my kid doing this. Like, it can't be them. It has to be somebody else. There has to be a mistake. This is not happening. Does that sound like correct. Denial?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we all want to think our kids are perfect. We all want to think we're perfect. Let's be real. We're not. Sometimes we can't even grasp of something. We can't even grasp the idea of something we did. So we conjure up a lie within ourselves.
That's what people do. That's what people do. Teenagers do. They deny. They be like, I have to tell you the truth. And they don't tell the full truth because they're like burying it.
Nope.
Dang.
Burying it.
Oh my gosh. I almost swore. I almost swore on a family show right there. All right.
That wouldn't be the first time.
No, I think only one time we've ever swore, and I had to put an E because I wasn't swearing because I like swearing. I don't normally swear.
No, you're quoting.
Because we were quoting some teenagers.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the third stage. Third stage.
Can't wait to get done with the podcast. Sean's like, Jordan, you just
third stage, seven third stages stage. Right, of the grief, on. Anger. It's perfectly normal to feel angry. Anger is a difficult emotion to deal with. And can be minimized by others. Oh, yeah. Like, you shouldn't be angry. Kids will be kids. Or what'd you expect? Or don't be angry. You'll get through this. Anger. Anger at the kid. Angry at yourself. Anger at the other parent. Anger at the co-parent. Angry at the bully's parents. Angry at the school, the principal. Anger.
Gosh, this is all making sense as I'm listening to this. This path that's broken down, like, this is the order that I've gone through during this. It's just like,
I just need to laugh. Please make me laugh.
No way. Yeah. I'm so mad. Are you freaking kidding me?
You're never leaving this house again. You're never getting the cell phone again. Shireen writes in this article.
That's
I was
angry
with myself that I was taking too long, you know, wanted to talk about mom and dad to people. Who felt I should have moved on. So I guess it's a quote like her parents died and I'm angry at myself. I was taking too long. It's like, come on, your parents have been dead for like a year. I moved on. This happened 2 months ago. Why? And then you get angry. How dare you? Right.
Right.
Angry at your, that's what a lot of.
And then are we supposed to, I guess, you know, it's hard to not act on anger, but we would then act on that. I guess we look at this internally and then we need to diagnose after anger as to like what we're really angry about.
So,
but ultimately, like, what's the answer we're looking for?
We're going to come back to you. Just keep saying all this wise stuff because if you, here's a story I just thought of based on what you just said. Let's say you're an adult and you get fired from your job and you are pissed. You're going through the stages of grief. Are you gonna drive down to your place of employment and make a scene? No. You're not gonna do that. Because that's just weird.
Right.
Right? You're gonna control yourself. Don't you agree?
Most people. Yeah, there are some
most people
out there that won't, but yes, most people.
But if you're in your own home, and your kid tells you, hey, I just want you to know I've been lying to you and this is what I've been doing. And you have that angry rage. What are the chances of that parent is not going to handle that anger well in that moment?
I mean, I guess it depends on the parent, but there are some parents out there that can't hold their anger in.
I mean, you just got shocked out of your mind because you just got an email back from the principal. You just found out that your daughter has been doing this. You know, your daughter's been sneaking out and sleeping around and has got a bad reputation, or, you know, your son has an STD. It's like so much, right? And like, you're like, what is going on? What have you been doing? You are so full of anger. Are you going to? This is why we're having this episode, just to think about these tough scenarios. Okay, next one is next stages of the grief. Ready? Bargaining.
Yep.
Bargaining. Bargaining stage is about making promises to yourself or a higher being. Like, please, God, if you just save me here, I'll never do this again. Please, God, if you just, please, please bring them
to
back.
The higher power. Not
if you save me from this one thing, then I will follow you forever. Or, you know what? Okay, I will never take a drink of alcohol ever again. Or I never yell at my kid again. I will never do this again.
I've totally done that. I love your laugh.
Every time you laugh, I'm going to laugh because I just need it. I need to have your laughter right now.
I got in a really terrible accident in high school where like half my face got ripped off. Not really, but like my nose and my lip broke out. And I remember saying like, man, if you could just fix me, I'll be such a good person.
Yeah. You were probably going, it was a football accident. Can you expand on it for a second? Yeah. Very traumatic. So
sure.
Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. So senior year, last practice of senior year, walkthroughs, not even tackling. I get pushed down. We're still used to wear helmets and shoulder pads, but no leg pads. You're not supposed to tackle. You're supposed to just touch. Anyway, I get pushed down and I fall on my head and my chin strap's not on because it's walkthroughs. Why do I need a chin strap on? And as I hit, the helmet bounces off and it the way I rolled, I don't know, but one side of my nostril got ripped almost completely off, dangling, and then my lip split open and I had blood all over, right? And so they had to come. So then, in that moment, you're like, oh man, what just happened? You know, I feel like I knocked my teeth out, you know? So there's the shock, right? Oh, geez, what happened? Oh my gosh, there's no way this just happened. Denial, right? So it doesn't have to be like someone's hurting you. Like it just can be any event that took place. And then, you know, basically as I'm sitting in the waiting room waiting for the doctor, I'm getting angry at the person who pushed me down, right? Getting angry at myself for not putting the chin strap on. Looking in I can't even look in the mirror because I got gauze shoved up my whole face. I don't even know what I look like.
My gosh.
And I don't know what the next stages of grief are, but ultimately, you know, they sew me up and it was like the doctor took the gauze off and he's like, oh my gosh. And I'm basing my reaction off of his reaction. He's like, I have to go back to my office and get my camera because I got to take a picture of you.
You remember that so vividly.
Oh, okay. So then he goes and get his camera, takes a picture of me, which I'm glad he did because I still have the photo now. But then he starts to operate on me and he's like, you know, your nose might not come back to heal. If it turns black, we'll have to go to surgery and you're going to have to take a piece of your butt and put it on your nose. I remember that to this day. I'm like, oh my gosh, are you serious? I'm so angry.
Now, you're a senior in high school. So you decided that you want to pursue a career of TV in meteorology at that time? Were you thinking my future?
No. That was not until college. I was like, oh, sure. And that just fell into my lap. I didn't know what I wanted to. I guess at that time I was like, we were in San Diego. So I was like, oh, it'd be so cool to go to LA and be a movie star. Yeah, that was dumb. But like this idea of like, oh, maybe I'll do something with cameras, make movies. I liked doing video work.
Was that part of the anger? Like, there goes, this might put that in jeopardy? Or like, what is my nose going to look like? My lip?
Oh, there was a lot of like, my face swelled up. I'm like, gosh, what am I going to look like after this? But I don't ever remember at this stage of life ever thinking those thoughts then.
Take a guess. After, I'm going to tell you the next stage of grief and you're not going to be surprised by what it is. After your angry phase, your bargaining phase, what did you feel after you get through your surgeries? Your face is bent.
Oh yeah, bargaining. And then I bargained. I said, hey God, can you fix my face? I remember saying that.
Your face is all bandaged up here. You had serious surgery. I'd be curious if we asked your mom, Velvet, did she go through the the stages of grief from this, right?
Good question. I don't know.
Some people have this even towards related to their God, angry at God. How could you do this to me? And so do you know what you felt afterwards? I think the word I'm about to say,
I was not angry at God. I was not angry at God. I was more just in disbelief that it happened.
Okay. Well, here it is. All right. So the next stage of grief is depression. Did you go
depression.
Through sadness, depression?
Thankfully, I did not go through depression.
The author writes, the jumble of emotions that usually accompanies the grieving process can typically lead to feelings of depression, isolation, anxiety, or feeling of dread. Sometimes the suffering seems too much to bear. Someone may question the meaning of life or feel like, you know, they want to be reunited with the person that died.
Sure.
this author writes, this person says a quote, "People are often unsure of how to help us in our grief. So if you can accept an offer of help or ask for help, it will help the effects of strengthening those friendships, depression." Right. So yeah, some people are in this depressive. How did my family turn out this way? How can I ever bounce back from this? You know, how can I move on? How can I go to my job and pretend to be happy and show up when my home life is such a wreck, right? My marriage is such a wreck.
Right.
My kid is such a wreck. You know, how can I know for me, I've gone through these stages, and here's something interesting about me is there's days and there's times that I really want to quit this job and I just want to blow it up and burn the house down, metaphorically, right? Because I help parents, you know, with healthy parenting, but then, you know, sometimes I don't act that way. I help people to try to raise really healthy kids, but I can't control my kids. And so
right.
I feel like such a poser. Like I'm making these Instagram videos and a podcast and TikToks about, you know, these are great things to do for your kids, but then my kids, they don't act perfectly. And it's like,
right.
I don't deserve to be doing this. It's that mind game. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so
yeah.
sad. Like, you know what I mean? It's,
I mean, I think the good thing though is you are aware of that and aren't pretending that that's yeah. not happening. Right.
Yeah.
So being open to people, a lot of us can see through that. It's like, oh, this guy, you know, says he's got the perfect family. He posts these pictures, but I know there's some juice down going on in there. And that's why people like honesty, because even if you seem yeah. perfect, that we understand that you've yeah. got hard times.
Yeah,
just be truthful, man. Like, you're not
yeah.
hiding from everything. There's no way
no.
there's a perfect
there's,
situation out there where someone raised a
no,
kid perfectly
right.
with no
there's
feelings
just
like
no
this.
Way. There's no
right?
way. There's no such thing as a perfect parent or a perfect child, teenager, or young adult. And this leads us to actually two final great steps. Step six, acceptance and hope. I believe in the five stages of grief, the fifth stage is acceptance. They've expanded on this. So, okay, let's say somebody has passed away, or you know, you have to accept your child is going to struggle with school or maybe not graduate, or your child is, you know, dating somebody you don't approve of, you don't like, your child has a different moral fabric than you. And I mean, what are you going to do about it? Well, one healthy thing to probably do is just accept this is where I'm at in life. I need to accept this child for who they are, accept this happened to me, accept this is actually happening, and I'm going to have hope. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I think having hope is the most important thing we can do, right? So, you know, I guess we, you know, going back to like the death of someone, that's one of the reasons why, you know, Christianity is so big, is because we are led with hope. Like
yeah,
it's not
yeah.
the end, right? If you have hope, there is a reason to wake up the next day.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose hope, what's mm-hmm. the point?
Yeah.
Why are we even here? What's the point of waking up and go to work?
Right.
To do what? But a lot of us want to, you know, when we're going through the stages of grief, I mean, you crawl into a hole and you don't know what's going to get
right.
you out of that hole. You just
right.
are in that hole and sometimes
right.
no one can help you. You can ask for help, but a lot
yeah.
of people don't want to ask for help.
I think going back to 30 minutes ago, you said, what do we do to move on? And I said, I don't know. I think that you want to do the active inner work to get to a place of acceptance and hope. That sounds like an answer to your question, right? Do the inner work you need.
Yeah.
And then in about right now, I'm going to tell you some things you can do to get to that place. But the last stage, okay.
Is it okay to think like you come to an acceptance? Let's just say, okay, let's just say this kid, your client, their kid is a drug dealer. Okay. You as a parent, you come to realization, you go through the stages of grief, you come to accept, okay, this is what they're doing.
Okay.
This is their choice. I feel
yeah,
like a
yeah.
failure, you know, blah,
yeah.
blah, but I have hope that he or she will get out of it. Is it okay for me to throw up my hands and be like, hey, listen, this is on you now. And I have a purpose outside of you. And this is giving me hope to keep doing what I'm doing for maybe another child or my spouse, or find another direction. Because let's say I poured my blood, sweat, and tears into this kid, and then they just destroyed your whole world. How do I move on? I almost have to not forget, but like build a wall.
You're right. So what I'm going to give you some thoughts on that right now, because you took like one of the most extreme scenarios, you know, drug dealing. And let's take, let's take something more common, which is also very saddening. Let's take, you know, maybe teenage sexting. Very, very sad, much more common, right? Or let's say, you know, dabbling with substances. So at one point, I think what acceptance means is accepting this is my situation right now. And I am responsible for my own mental health. I'm responsible for my own parenting. I want to accept this. I don't think what we're talking about when it comes to parenting, I'm just going to accept, my kid is going down a really, really dark path. My kid's a drug dealer. I love you, son. Like, you know, would you like a new cell phone number or would you like a bigger cell phone plan to increase your dealing? Right. It's like, kids will be kids. Yeah. No, that's not what I think. When we talk about grief. Let me go through the last one quickly. And then let me go through some more action steps we can do when we're in that spot. Because like I said, there's parents in this spot right now. And if you're not in that spot now, you will go through it. And the last one is processing grief. The author writes, there's no right or wrong way to process grief. It's just highly, highly individual. And that's honestly one of the main reasons why we had this podcast, is we want to help you process the internal grief of when your kid breaks your heart. Does that sound fair?
Yeah. So we have acceptance, we have hope, and then we basically process that.
Right. And that's kind of what we're doing right now. We're like, your question was actually rooted in processing. Well, how do we process acceptance if our kid is still doing these things? Right? Right.
Yes. That's my thing. Is like, do I just accept that they're going to eventually be in jail? Right. And I'm like, sorry. Because then I'm going to have to build emotional up a wall boundary. So that I'm not hurt.
So the tip would be, you know, remember, this is like something to help you with your internal processing. There's a difference between a wall and a boundary. A wall is built to keep people out. And a boundary is more like an orange cone, you know, that we can move around. So you want to build up orange cones. And so, and let me use an orange cone example. Here's some action steps for us. Okay. We're going to go through these a little quicker than we sure did. Is that okay? All right. So I think action step number one is to realize that when you realize your kid is breaking your heart or has broke your heart, realize that you are probably in grief. Right.
You okay?
Right.
Realize that we are in grief because of what our child.
And this could be your kid has D's and F's. Okay. That could be enough, right? Like, do you think that you were in crisis or going through the stages of grief when you had your football accident?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, reflecting on it in that time, no. And you asked me if I was depressed. I may have been, but I could have blacked that whole thing out. You know, the mind is crazy how it'll sometimes just shut out a memory because it was so haunting for you. And some of us could have had that.
Do you think you've ever been through the stages of grief in your life besides that incident? Any other times in your life? Anything?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Like people passing away, it's tough. You know, the hard part too is like, let's just say you go through someone passing in your family and, you know, you have a spouse and you have to be strong for your spouse while your spouse is going through grieving, but you're grieving also, but you can't grieve the same way because you're still raising a family. It can be tough.
So we'll just go through these numerically. Number one, realize that you're in grief. Number two is something we've talked a lot about on this podcast. And you know what's really cool is that there's people doing number two right now. There's parents right now that are literally, you're on a walk and you're listening to this podcast. There's parents right now that you're driving in a car and you're feeling like a weight is lifted off your shoulders. There's parents right now that are listening to this while they're doing the dishes because their kids are preoccupied and they're taking care of themselves. Self-care and patience. What do we do when your kid's breaking your heart? One is realize you're in grief. Two is you're taking care of yourself and you're just being patient with the process.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm booking a one-way Aruba, flight to Aruba.
Bahamas.
Going on vacation. Come on, mama. Yeah, it's like, you're doing this. The more you screw up, kid, the more trips I get to go on for myself.
No, that's true. Like, this is, honestly, you're going through grief. Spend some extra, you know, maybe Work a little less. Plan yourself a vacation.
Would that be running away from it?
Maybe not. It's for you to decide. Just self-care. When you're in this, you've got to care for yourself. And this is what a lot of parents don't. They're so busy caring for their kid who's in crisis, acting out, but they have to take care for themselves. All right. Number three, I think, is something that we've alluded to in this episode. You ready for this? So here you are. You're in this place of shock. Your kid is, you just found out your kid is doing this or doing it again.
Right.
This is not easy. Ready? Do not react.
Yes.
Do not parent.
Do not react.
Do not talk when you are in a place of immense pain. I feel like that's good advice. Do you feel like that's good advice? It means you are around a child.
Yeah.
You are about to barf out some trauma and some pain. Maybe your own trauma. Maybe your own pain. Maybe their choice like triggered you or brought you back to that place. Do you think it's good to talk to a child or a teenager when you're in that place of just shock?
Yeah, because all you're going to do is yell, probably. I've
been there, man. I'm not a big yeller.
Nothing can be heard or understood.
There's shame that can come out. There's yelling. I mean, hurt people hurt people. And you're really hurting because your child just hurts you. So I feel like it's good advice to just try to shut your mouth in that moment. I've been there, man, and I didn't shut my mouth. And there's times I have shut my mouth. Do you think that's good advice or no? Be real with me.
No, I do. I do. But I know how hard it is for people to do that. Because we all have a reaction. We're all upset so in that moment. But then as I think about what a lot of us will actually sit and be like, what do I say right now? Because we don't even know what to say. And maybe that's like a little trigger that's saying, you're not supposed to say anything, probably, dude. Just chill.
Yeah, if you have that, you just found out some heartbreaking news. It's probably best to not say anything to your child. To your child.
And don't say it to your child for that. Right.
Go process your emotions with someone else.
Correct.
Not your child. Your child is not your therapist, not your friend. Is a very influential child, a young child. We don't want to traumatize the child by our reactions.
And that time to process could be different for everybody, right?
Next step, number four. In this place of grief, shock, be mindful of your self-talk. Here's something interesting. There's a woman that was recently interviewed on Joe Rogan's podcast. She's an author. Her name is Abigail Schreier. You might have seen some of her videos going viral recently. She's written a couple books, but this book, and because she's invited on the biggest podcast ever, has launched her popularity. The book is called Bad Therapy: Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up. Have you heard about this, Jordan? Essentially, the gist of this is her theme is, look, what we found is that the kids who are in therapy are the least healthy kids. And you would think it's the opposite. If a kid goes to therapy, they're getting treatment. They're getting better. They're going to be happy.
Yeah, but
my studies have found, Abigail writes, is that by dwelling on the problems and by talking about your anxiety and talking about your sadness, it's making you more sad.
Correct. I've been saying that for years.
On this podcast.
Yes. I'm like,
we need to have an episode about that. I'll read the book and we'll come back and we'll talk about it. So here's something directly from Amazon.com. From the author of Irreversible Damage, an investigation into a mental health industry that is harming, not healing American children. Ooh, that is why it only has 4.8 stars on Amazon, because, you know, probably we're like, how dare you talk about us? We love kids. We're super smart psychologists and therapists. In virtually.
Dude, back in the day was the best. It was like you fall off the horse, like, shut up, stop crying, get back up on that thing. You know what I mean?
Best.
It's like, I'm not going to ask you.
It was
you
the
how
best, but
it's
like, maybe it's a,
like, let's
what
go.
This is a correction over an overindulgence into this. Amazon writes, in virtually every way that can be measured, Gen Z's mental health is worse than that of previous generations. U.S. suicide rates are climbing. Oh, that's heartbreaking when your child thinks about hurting themselves, self-harm, cutting themselves. Yeah. Antidepressant prescriptions are common. For children can be common. the proliferation of mental health diagnosis has not helped the staggering number of kids who are lonely, lost, sad, and fearful of growing up. What is wrong with America's youth? I remember seeing a clip on Abigail talking to Joe. Why is it so many 16-year-olds, they don't drive, they don't want a license, right?
Right.
So what is so mean weird. Because of this? I say to you, point four, be mindful of your self-talk. Like, you know, how you think matters. If you want to dwell on this, you might be going down a bad path. You might be, you know, being in a codependent relationship with your own child. You might stunt your own growth. You might stunt your own going through the stages of grieving by how you dwell on this. So this is why you've mentioned this in this podcast. Like, how do you get through these stages? How do you think about it? Right?
You put your pants on and you walk out the door and you amen, continue brother. Living. You,
amen.
Because it's those that stay in the bed, keep the lights off, they're down in that hole. You're not going to move on. You have to keep going. And it's hard. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying this like, oh, he doesn't. You're right. Mm-hmm. It's very hard, but you got to do it. It's like Jim or Sean said he's got this gym thing now, right? You're going to the gym more often. It's like, it's not easy every day to go, but you just got to get your butt in there.
Do the hard work.
So like when we're depressed, we just got to get our butt out of the house, get some vitamin D, just find hope.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm feeling a lot better now than I was at the beginning of this episode. Just talking to you and laughing with you. Here's a couple more tips. Talk to your adult people, not your kid. Talk to your adult people, your person, your spouse, your best friend. Talk to them. And when you talk, be aware of shame. Be aware of avoidance. Be aware of lecture. Be aware of avoiding this. You need to step into this with your child. You be aware of rage. Be aware of controlling them. Be aware that, you know, you moving towards command and control, that actually may not be the answer to this problem. You yelling at them. You lecturing them. You avoiding them. You saying it might make worse if we step in. It's like, be aware. You've got to talk to your adult people. Talk to professionals. Talk to your people, not your kid. Your kid is not your therapist.
Yeah, and talking will help. Like you said, you feel better. Like just talking about some call of stuff helps.
You know, this is what I did when I was going through something. I, you know, talked to my wife and I called up, you know, some of my best friends, say, hey, going through something, can we talk?
Yeah. That's good. And they give you advice, or they give you hope, or they gave you love.
Yeah,
they
buddy,
gave you something that you needed, hopefully. Yep.
You're one of my people. Yeah. I talked to you
good
about some stuff. All right. Next one. Last two are really good. Connection before correction. You hear that a lot. It's one of the best parenting tools of all time. But connection before correction, realizing that if you are going to correct this child behavior, you've got to spend the time to connect. And that might take a day. It might take a week. It might take some time to process this with your child before you then start doing the correction. You moving into correction within the first 2 hours of you learning about this is probably not the best decision. You maybe want to sleep on it for a night or two and say, mind is not in a good spot. I just found out my son is doing this. I just found out my daughter is doing this. You don't have to parent in 24 hours or 48 hours. You might want to sleep on it. You might have two sleepless nights, but connect with that child first before you correct. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's good. Would it be okay to like to force connection? And by that, I mean, like, let's say it's a Wednesday, you find this out upcoming weekend, you've got,
you're in a crisis.
You know, your kid has this big plan or you do, you know, and be like, no, we're canceling everything.
That is some of the best
to the
advice ever.
And we're
in fact, I actually have a podcast we're going to do, what to do in a crisis. Oftentimes canceling everything, that's the best choice. Okay. Cancel it all.
Okay.
My family is more important. I can't come into work this week. I have a family crisis. My 14-year-old needs me. This is more important. What often parents do is we can't take them out of school. Oh my gosh, their school. Nope. School is less important than family.
Right.
What about their grades? What about this?
That's
or what
true.
About this? Nope.
Yeah, that's good. One day is not going to hurt them.
One
Two
more
days
tip.
Is not going to hurt their grades. And
one
if
more
you were
tip.
To tell the teachers,
you're
going to
love this one. Okay.
Last tip.
I, as you might have heard, I'm a new dog owner. I've had Robbie for a year and a half. And on our front door, we used to have a latch, not a knob. and a black latch. Yeah.
So you push down to open
and pull
it.
And the door opens. Yeah. But our freaking Australian Labradoodle named Robbie, he's very, very smart. And so what he learned to do is that he would get on his two little hind legs and he would, you know, open the latch and he ran away. And it was sucky and horrible. Yeah, because my dad runs away.
I told my wife, if I get another dog, I had a dog my whole life. I finally don't. I love it. I told my wife, if we get another dog, if that dog runs away, that's on them. And I'm not going to find that dog. So just so you know, I'm not searching the hood. Dude, this dog wants to live with me. It'll come back. I'm not going. Dude, I've searched for dogs that run away
my
entire life. So annoying.
I know. So
then they
annoying.
Get hit by a car. I remember that as a kid.
Right.
One kid, and it was traumatic.
So
I'm like,
here's
no.
A long story short. Anymore. So what I realized is that I cannot trust this dog to not open the door. The impulses for this puppy and this young dog is too strong. The dog really wants to run away. And I have to make a choice now.
Okay.
I'm either going to let the dog go.
Let it go. Let it be free.
That's
born
option one.
Wild.
I even thought about that. Option one is I let the dog go. Kids will be kids. Dogs will be dogs. There's nothing I can do.
Dogs will be dogs.
I don't
dogs.
Believe in that choice, but that's option one. Option two.
Okay.
Is I can just live in this pattern of just running after my disconnected dog and chasing after him down the street, into the woods.
I
could do this for years.
Bro. You can get an invisible fence. Why don't you spend $2,000 on an invisible fence? Spend more money on that thing.
That's a good option. We'll call that option three. No, option two is just don't do anything.
I'm going
and
with
by
option
essentially
one.
Doing option two. By doing option two, you're enabling this. You're enabling. You are making it able for your dog to run away from your house. You with me with that word choice?
Okay.
Enabling? Or option three? Uh-huh. You can replace the latch with a knob.
Knob.
You can go down to Home Depot or Amazon, and for $12, you can purchase a knob that my dog. I could purchase a knob that my dog cannot open. So here's your last action step, everybody. What do you do when your teen breaks your heart? Well, you can change the doorknobs if needed.
Yeah, but you're not fixing the problem.
When I change the doorknobs, my dog cannot run away anymore.
Yeah.
The dog still wants to run away, I'm sure. But the dog can't.
That's what you
run
ultimately
away.
Need to fix. But with our kids, they only can't run away till they're 18.
I'm not going to try to address every topic we've done here today on how do you address this topic? How do you address this topic? But
what you're saying as a short-term fix, you could change
it's like a little parable,
the locks.
Right? Is this a parable? The story of Robbie and the doorknob is a parable. And I can try to explain it, what I think it means. But
yes,
what I did here is I used my parental power and I changed the doorknobs. And by doing that, I stopped the enabling and I stopped the ability for this child, dog, to do this. Now, a child's not a dog. And the dog's not a child, but do you see what I've gone here? What's the moral of the story, if you ask me?
The moral of the story is I think you're saying there might be some drastic measures that you have to do in order to stop whatever it is in that moment for whatever period of time it is.
Right.
But this isn't a end-all, be-all, because the next time the door gets cracked open, Robbie's going to bolt. So that could be an analogy to our kids. Like we can force stop them for a little bit. By changing the locks or whatever we need to do.
Right.
But then we have to really keep going and fix the problem and get to the root cause.
This...
And for you, you need to teach that dog to, instead of opening the front door, open up the dang fridge and get you a beer.
Yeah. This is a parable about how powerful parents are and about how we do a lot of talking on this podcast about reaching our kids' hearts. But I try to reach my dog's heart by not running away. And it didn't work.
Right.
So I could either sit in
there
and for the next 10 years of my life run after this dog, or I could just let it go and say dogs will be dogs. I don't want to do either of those options. So for this specific situation, I changed the doorknob. So if your child is struggling with screens, you might want to change the doorknob. If your child is struggling with how they're driving their car, you might want to change the doorknob. If your child is struggling in this school, you might want to change the doorknob. Yeah, some doorknobs can't be changed. We have to go about it a different way. But this is the moral of the story, is think about how you can possibly wisely change the doorknobs of your kids' lives. You sure? Was it?
Dude, that's good stuff. Good stuff.
We went through a lot together today, Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you. That's good. No, we did. And it, you know, for some of us, it's still very hard, but this has been very, very helpful.
I thank you for doing,
thanks
what,
for
you
doing
do,
what you do,
for being a part of this. I'm just thankful that I know that if your kids break your heart, it doesn't have to mean what you think it might mean. It doesn't mean they're hopeless. It doesn't mean they're on a horrible path. It doesn't mean you're a bad parent. I'm thankful that my child's behavior does not dictate me. My child's behavior is not my identity. I'm thankful that my child is not me.
Right.
And I am not my child. I'm thankful that you can still be a good parent and have a troubled teen. I'm thankful that I'm not alone and that I'm not perfect and my kids are not perfect. And I'm thankful for all these things that I want to focus on here as we wrap up our time. What about you? What are you thankful for?
Man, I'm thankful that we went through it. I didn't know the stages of grief. I'm glad I do now because I understand what I'm going through in that moment. I'm like, oh yeah, this is that stage now. You know, it's really sad that we all have to go through stuff like this. I'm, you know, in this moment, thankful that I don't have to go through this, but I'm a little weary of the future because, like we said in this podcast, the reality is many of us will probably go through a broken heart at one point or another. So I'm thankful that I just had a weekend where my heart was completely filled with joy just from family activities. And now I have to just make sure I'm mindful of the horizon, because it's that sadness that that's tough. And I can see that and hear that in people who's gone through it. Yeah. Lead with hope. Have hope, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us today. You are a good parent. Oh my gosh, family life and parenting is so hard. I hope today gave you some tools and some inspiration. And if you're enjoying this podcast, then please do me a favor. Leave us a positive review on your podcast provider. And if you're hearing this and you're struggling as a parent, your family is struggling, or you need parenting tools for that one challenging, struggling kid, well, I will see you in a live Zoom call inside my VIP membership, and I will give you the specific tools you need to solve every problem you have and to stay strong, be close, and teach wisdom.